top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
In a remote mountain resort, a team of international terrorists has planned an elaborate, perfect crime to steal without a trace. They must bury the resort and everyone in it. But there is one thing they didn't plan on. Chicago Police Sergeant Jack Wilde. Ian Griffith, Nastasha Kinski, and Christopher Plummer.
I hope you're happy to learn that you're making things difficult for me.
Oh, gee, I'm all choked up.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 296, Cracker Jack.
Cracker Jack. Not Cracker Jack 3, which you've often, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've heard us refer to many, many, many times.
And for reference, even though the two films are unrelated, we urge our listeners to check out both Cracker Jack 3, the movie, an extraordinarily lazy Bo Svenson vehicle.
Bo Svenson, and then, Oliver Grenier, how do you pronounce his name?
Grenier, French Olivier kickboxer. Of some modest notoriety.
Who appeared in the movie playing a Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Among its many,
among its hilarious, many
foibles, exactly. But this is the original Cracker Jack.
And this is Cracker Jack, the progenitor,
indeed. And it comes with it right out of the gate two signs that it's going to be just dreadful, but okay, in a good way.
Those are
one is mentioning the title of the movie. In the movie. It's always a sign of something just really awful.
You know they're calling you down the station, Jack? They're calling you Cracker Jack. Now, I'm not asking because I'm getting ahead of myself, but the reason why... The movie starts off as a Lethal Weapon ripoff, basically. You have two cops partnered up, one white, one black, and the black cop is rather cantankerous, and he's saying things like, "God damn it, Jack," like five different times. And you have the white cop, that being Jack Wilde.
Indeed.
How's that for telegraphing? Who's rather wild and doesn't really care because he lost his wife and his daughter, I guess, on the beat.
Yeah.
So he's completely a loose cannon. And
well, this is all told in a series of flashbacks.
Right.
And flashback being the other notoriously terrible device if it's preceded by someone gazing into the heavens and then the camera zooming in on their eyes and then the flashback happening.
Exactly.
So it's not exactly like it's Godfather 2. No, this is like
A Fredo in this one.
There is a Fredo. It's almost like the Wayne's World, like doodle, like flashback.
I forgot where I was going. I lost my train of thought, but that's where I was going, where the partner, the black cop, the Danny Glover analog, was saying, "Jack, you gotta clean up your act. You can't be so wild and off the cuff. You know, they're calling you down the station, they're calling you Cracker Jack." Yeah. How does that nickname correlate with being a wild
if anything, it'd be the opposite cop? Right, because a Cracker Jack production is something that's of top shelf quality. So clearly he's derelict in his duties as a cop. He's like this Serpico loose cannon cliche to whatever, and he can't...
He's a Martin Riggs cliche from Lethal Weapon.
Oh, that too. Yeah. And he's just... So, yeah, exactly. The exact opposite. They just needed some loose loose canon, loose tie-in to the, whatever this film is called. And
I mean, they could have called him Wild Jack, his name is Jack Wild, but they call him Cracker Jack. And I mean, you know, Cracker Jack, I think of a nice confectionery treat that you eat at a baseball game with a prize inside.
Which might not be much longer for this earth if we're, you know, with the latest scandal in baseball, and that's a dying sport right there. So the experience of enjoying and munching on your Cracker Jacks and your caramel corn might be one lost to the ages in the ballparks. But
but anyway, they call him Cracker Jack. he's Cracker Jack. From henceforth, he'll be referred to as Cracker Jack in this podcast.
And the flashback comes, as you would expect, with a movie that has a guy gaze off into space forlornly to precede a flashback with Caroline, the cliche of cliches. Get out of the car! And his wife is blown to smithereens as she looks at him quizzically. Why? Why? But it made me realize, like, if anyone does yell, get out of the car, I'm getting out of the car.
If anybody yelled at me, get out of the car, I'd probably do the same thing. I'd look at them quizzically and go, why?
No one just says that, right? Well, I guess carjackers say that. But this person, no, no, they clearly knew one another.
Get out of the car. There's obviously, there's something bad is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Nothing good can happen if somebody says to you, get out of the car. So the best thing to do is just get out of the fucking car.
And again, this shootout and this flashback showing what a Cracker Jack is has, of course, this the time-honored action cliche where the hero's friend is in the sights of one of the baddies, and then all of a sudden the shot to his rescue right between the eyes of the antagonist sends him hurtling down a flight of stairs. Why someone who's shot doesn't just crumple and land in a heap where they stand, I'll never know, but for some reason they turn head over at Keister and fly down a flight of stairs.
Or over a balcony, of course.
Oh, of course,
depending
yeah.
what's at hand.
Yeah, if exactly. Catwalk, balcony, you got to take one step forward and then just tumble like yeah. several flights.
But crumpling, forget about it. And the thing too, I mean, at this point, what I had noticed, and it does change later on in the film, is that there is wall-to-wall action, if you want to call it action, but it's bloodless. Like, there's not one squib in the entire production budget. Now, later on, there are some squibs, but they're of the non-exploding variety. So somebody gets shot, and it's like paintball, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, squibs were not really in the offing when it came to budget, because this is a threadbare production. I mean, we said the
not
last...
Not as bad as Cracker Jack 3.
Cracker Jack 3 may have had taken a wedding... you know, wedding videographer approach to budget. This one maybe eclipsed that one by about double by bringing in the
this
likes of noted
like a real movie, but
almost yeah. by bringing in the likes of legendary Canadian thespian Christopher Plummer. That would have eaten up half the production cost right there.
Nastasia Kinski, we just talked about her father a couple episodes
ago. I don't know
ago.
If she commands that big a dollar, but
no. But I'm just saying. I mean, there are names in the
there
cast,
names, yeah.
and Cracker Jack himself is third billed on the poster, and he's played by the wonderful Thomas Ian Griffith, who
yeah.
I had never heard before.
No,
have you heard of him?
Never, but he...
No, Mr. Griffith, I never heard of him before. I had to look him up in IMDb, and I keep thinking of Jonathan Taylor Thomas, right?
Yeah,
Thomas
exactly.
Ian Griffith, and he really didn't do much of note. He was in Karate Kid Part 3, which is not the least heralded of the Karate Kids. That would be of course, the next Karate Kid, the one starring Hilary Swank replacing Ralph Macchio.
Ooh.
But he was in Karate Kid 3. He's probably one of the main antagonists in that one. He was
I believe the villain from Karate Kid is selling insurance now. They have this big...
Martin Cove, yeah.
Yeah, wow, good for him.
Yeah, and say Cobra Kai, it's Koala Kai. It's a cute commercial, I
it
like
is.
It.
It is, yeah.
He was in John Carpenter's Vampires, although I don't remember him at all from that film. Not that I don't really remember that film too much, to be honest with you. I should revisit it, I think. Except the... I like James Woods, but I'm not really crazy about his... his public persona.
It's funny you mention that, because he cuts a very Woodsian figure. I was going to say Paul Rudd crossed with James Woods.
Paul Rudd, yeah,
a little bit, that. And he's yeah. got the leather jacket, the hockey hair.
Yeah,
I don't
this
know.
Was the early 90s, so everybody early to late 90s, everyone had hockey hair.
I know, point, I did. But. Well, the fact that the star of your action pick is third build does not augur well. I mean, yeah. Bruce Willis is Die Hard. Steven Seagal is always
you
whatever.
You sound like Homer Simpson there. Bruce Willis is Die Hard. Come on, Die
he
Hard,
is.
Do something. I'm waiting
Steven
for Die
Seagal
Hard.
Steven Seagal is always
Die
who
Hard
he
give
is.
Up? Did Payback give up?
But, I mean, my God.
Did Lethal Weapon give up? the title will always be the name of the character, of course.
It's true. Well, I mean, excuse me. Lethal Weapon, it may be at outset, but then it lurches into a diehard knockoff.
Without a doubt.
And it's all predicated upon this guy's propensity for violence and the fact that the time-honored cliche, and this is the best exposition ever, he gets a call from his chief who says, listen, Crackerjack, on your suspension, you're going to have time to think about what you did, whatever. He's obviously suspended a la Serpico or whatever, these Clint Eastwood vehicles. He's the rogue cop who's suspended. And
he needs time off to get his act in order. I mean, this is a guy who punches his brother-in-law in the face for throwing him a surprise party. So, he's obviously got some issues.
Well, that certainly was a surprise. And not only did he do that, he pulled a gun on his own surprise party to say that he can fly off the handle. I mean, this guy should not be flashing a badge or flashing anything else anywhere, anytime.
Well, luckily he doesn't flash anything else around the movie other than a badge and a gun.
But an amazing pretense to get this guy away from the mean streets of Chicago to the bucolic, lovely confines of British Columbia, like our favorite home of bad movies. I mean, my God, it's such a soft spot. Hunt to Kill. Among many others.
Firestorm.
Good God. Just a tax haven.
So many movies that we've podcasted have been taking place in the woods and forests and back of British Columbia. This one takes place in a mountain resort.
Yes.
A wintry, snowy mountain resort.
Getaway. And it's funny, I've never seen anyone less inclined to enjoy this kind of thing than this booze hound. And it's funny, like almost as a tribute, I'm enjoying some whiskey for the podcast.
Some whiskey. Not now, J&B, though.
Not J&B, but at every turn when there's nerves that need to be steeled, our protagonist turns to J&B, that iconic staple of cinema. At last count, I believe it was 350 films that this brand has been associated with.
You actually counted how many movies.
I did read it somewhere, and you texted me American Psycho.
American Psycho, yeah. It's been in Patrick Bateman's favorite
Strip Nude for Your Killer, which is a bit redundant, but tons of giallo flicks, like every brooding Southern Italian swarthy guy
is giallo. Strip Nude for Your Killer, that is redundant. That is good, yeah.
It turns to the J&B for succor in times of trouble.
What does J&B stand for?
I'm not sure. It's
not Barrows and James, that would be B&J.
I don't know, but it was a whiskey apparently favored by George III, and it goes back centuries, and I've never tried it. It's just, I feel like I've consumed it with its presence here.
Having
it should
watched
have top
so many
billing.
Giallos, I ended up picking J&B as my whiskey of choice every time I would go to the liquor store for whiskey, if not bourbon.
There you go, marketing at its finest. Yeah. And it's funny because all of this talk about going and getting away from it all and punching out the brother-in-law and this party and how this is going to recharge his batteries. It's all really for naught because trouble follows.
Trouble follows Cracker Jack wherever Cracker Jack goes.
And what also is troubling about what takes place on the mountain is the fact that the filmmakers reversed the cable car that goes up the mountain. I don't know if you
were... funicular.
The funicular. Yeah. Funiculi, funicula, funiculi, funicula. Yeah, it was like...
Is that bouncing my head around in the time to the
It was going the wrong way, i.e. descending the mountain for the first frame when it was supposed to be going up. And the filmmakers later remedied this and showed the tree line, disappearing into the distance as it went up the mountain. But, I mean, this speaks to the kind of incredibly shoddy production that this is. And they get to the mountain... And things are not going too well because our hero turns to J&B
right away. He's got no interest in the slopes or whatever, the glaciers or whatever the heck they have on the entertainment or the buffet or whatever the heck is going on at this resort.
Oh, the buffet. Yeah, of course. And there's
he does have a slight interest in the bartender as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or not the bartender. I'm sorry. Nastasia Kinski. What she plays?
She was
an
events tour guide.
Coordinator, sort of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just showing Germans and sundry Japanese tourists the wonders and the beauty and the natural beauty of BC, which it is. It's a star.
Mm-hmm. Now there are evil machinations afoot at this resort.
Of course.
And this is perpetrated by our Hans Gruber analog, played yeah. by Christopher Plummer.
Oh, I thought that was one of his henchmen, but either way, like, yeah, he's... this you might have to explain to me, because there was a character named Iceman who I associate that with diamonds. So I don't know if they were going to rob Mafioso... I don't know.
They were going to rob Mafioso diamonds, but at the same time, they also wanted to make it look like a natural disaster. So they wanted to explode the glacier.
That seems a little excessive.
Or the glacier, as they call it in New Zealand. So they got Iceman because he's... and this is not Iceman from Top Gun. Isn't that the character Val Kilmer played?
Oh, no, I was going to say Chuck Liddell of MMA fame, who was nicknamed the Iceman because he's so stone cold.
From recollection, which is starting to get a little bit shoddy, I think that was... Maverick was Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer was the Iceman.
No, it sounds right by
maybe,
me. Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't really yeah. care. But
neither of them was a Cracker Jack, though.
That's true. Sure. That's true. And somebody was Goose. That was Anthony Edwards. Anyway, what am I talking about? Top Gun? I don't know. I digress. They call him the Iceman because he was an ice expert and he was able to he was able to demolish the glacier somehow in a controlled demolition. So.
And this was explained away as that he was some sort of researcher, maybe going to dig some cores, and I don't know whether this was some nascent, you know, greenhouse gas, global warming type movie, I'm not sure, but he is going undercover as some kind of environmentalist scientist, but really what he's trying to do is, again, be Mr. IED and assist this massive plot. And, my God, who would be left to defend this attempt than this unarmed, because his wife insists that he not be armed for the duration of the vacation, hothead and you know, borderline alcoholic crackerjack, and he's really the
very,
only
very very thin border, by the way.
It is. And it's funny when, again, very similar to Nakatoma Towers
and
Die Hard, you have the storming of the ramparts by these terrorists. They may have arrived by helicopter. Yes, I think they did. So they're jumping out like you know, Jimi Hendrix in the in his Air Force days. I don't know why I picked that as an analogy, but there was the Hans Gruber character, and he's sort of calling them like, jump, jump, jump.
Well,
and he's
yeah,
got
I mean,
a
just
slew
like,
of...
Just like Alan Rickman in Die Hard. Yeah. Christopher Plummer, who I thought acquitted himself pretty well. He employed this indeterminate European accent.
As one does.
What made this movie kind of funny is that with the exception of Anastasia Kinski, European equaled villainous. So any character of European descent was a de facto villain.
Yeah, it's true. And the... I guess the mobsters were, as you alluded to, there was a complete, like,
Don Ross
quivering bag of jelly Fredo character who looked the part almost entire, and then they had obviously a knockoff Don Corleone, very, very low, downmarket Don, but my God, and the one has a heart attack, reaches for his pills, Fredo is trying to assist him, the terrorists spring forth, bust in, take all these people hostage, and it's in the middle of some kind of, I guess, a ball gown type soiree in this mountain villa. And I thought, man, like, where was this exactly? Because at parts of it, there were bikini babes. And
yeah, it's weird.
Temperate
like, what
kind of climate.
Like,
what?
At one point, they're like, they're skiing in these mountains, and all of a sudden, they're at a beach, and it's like, and then there's a grotto, and I'm like, Four Seasons in one movie. Like,
no, it's true.
Bizarre.
And, you know, of course, it's all left to our hero to defend, you know, the civilians against this terrorist
and
force.
And like Die Hard, he's all by his lonesome. Like Die Hard, he did, at first he's going around taking out the terrorists. Nobody knows he's there. Who's his fly in the ointment? Like Die Hard, he's in communication with the police. He's then in communication with, like, you know, it wasn't the FBI, I think it was like
no
National
I believe
Guard
the
national
yeah, if, yeah, if not them, or the Marines took over. And that reminds me of something I learned, which is going to be hilarious when we actually get to that. Thank you for mentioning that, the call for backup. It was just unbelievably stellar. And
but unlike Die Hard, the effects in this one were less than stellar, less than special. And it just, I don't know, it was a Die Hard ripoff without the magic of Die Hard, but it had a lot of laughs, so you gotta give it that.
It did, and most notably, a character unto itself. If you could call J&B Scotch Whiskey a character, then there's the baby monitor character, because Cracker Jack's nephew mm-hmm. is about probably 6 months old. He actually looks kind of like my son, which is weird, but...
Hopefully you're a better father than Cracker Jack's brother-in-law.
Although that man can take a punch.
That he could. And, no glass jaw him.
And I guess this would have been nascent technology of the time, the baby monitor, because these negligent fucking parents were listening to their baby from poolside with margaritas in their hands and thinking, man, this is really not good. So what are they supposed to do?
The baby's in the room with the baby monitor, they're at the poolside drinking it up, or they're at the ballroom.
Must be nice.
Is this how you parent, Chris?
It's not my personal style, but to each their own. But,
okay.
And
do you have a baby monitor?
I do not.
No?
My apartment is so small, I'm the baby monitor.
You monitor the baby yourself.
I do. It's 500 square feet, and if he makes a noise, I am within 30 feet of him instantly at any one time. But my God, like, what separates this, I think, from Die Hard, besides the
budget,
catering budget that's 1,000th a time, and besides the quality of the screenwriting and the direction,
and the acting and the talent, and behind the camera, in front of the camera,
is this sort of Weltanschauung, this worldview, held by this terrorist creep. He almost wants to create some sort of
new Third Reich.
And I don't know whether that was to emphasize his Teutonic accent, because it was kind of lost on me. He was, again, sort of a mid-Atlantic, sort of half Belgian. I don't know what the hell he was, but his ethno-nationalism was so hardcore that even his own henchmen didn't buy into it. Exactly. And they're like, I'm out of here. I draw the line.
You create a new social structure. Good on you. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I'm...
This is a little bit of scope creep. This is beyond my pay range. And I'm, oh my God. So yeah, essentially you have one lone wolf doing battle against these terrorists, and this, I guess, crowbarred in love story between Natasha Kinski and this rogue rebel guy. And of course him trying to, I guess, reestablish a relationship with his sister, because this is par for the course, and I don't know if it's salvageable between him and his brother-in-law, which is pretty amazing.
Well, his brother-in-law is rather forgiving. He's a forgiving type, so...
He really is. You'd think if someone...
He takes a punch with aplomb and almost gratitude.
You'd think after being punched out by somebody, within a week, you would not want to go on vacation with them?
No.
I need
at least 2 weeks to go off, I'd say, if I was punched out by somebody before going off on a mountainous vacation. But,
And then it's just, basically all hell breaks loose. It's up to him. And you mentioned the call for backup. So I don't know if we're going to segue into what we've learned.
Sure.
That I found was hilarious, because if this is what counts as backup, boy, are we in trouble. Because these guys, so you get the call. We're holed up in a mountain retreat resort. We're being held hostage by terrorists. Your course of action then, if you're the general or whatever, your lieutenant commander in charge of this crack outfit, is to send all your troops up in a gondola.
Crack outfit or outfit on crack?
Might as well have been. Yeah,
exactly,
he sent all his troops in a gondola. And with a, I guess, machine gun mounted... artillery on top of the gondola, which I'm not sure exactly how that worked, but they managed to jerry-rig it. And sure enough, who would have thought that having all your troops in one location would prove bad? Because that's not good. And the terrorists made quick work of this gondola crew, and that 20 or 30 hardcore Marines they stuffed into that thing.
I think you say that
done for
$20 or $30 they spent on the miniature when they looked at the gondola. But
well, it's funny because Cracker Jack 3, I mean, is incredibly
cheap.
It's
notoriously cheap.
There's a scene with a fishing hole, and it looks like a ditch And yeah, and Bo Svenson is pensively casting a line into what, like, he's supposed to be fly fishing. Meanwhile, the water's not moving. It's clearly a ditch. But that movie is very hilarious.
That and movie's one of a kind.
It's shockingly bad. It's as bad as any action movie that's ever been made.
But at the same time, as good.
It is. Yeah. But there's no connective tissue between the two. Other than terrorism.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I was, one of the things I learned about this movie.
I learned more, but you can continue.
Okay, well, I'll say what I say. I mean, it's amazing how unscrupulous these movie distributors were back in the 80s and 90s, how they would take movies that had no connective tissue and slap on a number after the title of something that came before. Trying to coast on that name recognition to shift a few more units, because this was followed by Cracker Jack 2. Now, Cracker Jack 2 had absolutely nothing to do with Cracker Jack the first. That one starred noted action star Judge Reinhold and Supermall Carol Alt.
Oh,
okay. She was pretty
good. Yeah, she was back in the day. She was something.
Yeah, you know, Sports Illustrated swimsuit. She was pretty good. and then, of course, we get the god-awful... god-awfully great Cracker Jack 3 with Bo Svenson and Oliver Grunier, which had nothing to do, I'm assuming, with Cracker Jack 2, which I haven't seen. And I read the synopsis of Cracker Jack 2. It has nothing to do with Cracker Jack 1, other than the fact that there are terrorists, like you said.
Oh, okay.
The other thing I learned is that, yes, this may be a diehard ripoff, but one of the things there's many things that's lacking from Die Hard. We mentioned that. Another notable thing is lines. Die Hard has some of the best fucking lines in the history of cinema. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. No happy trails, Hans. No come out to the coast. We'll get together. Yeah, have exactly. A few laughs. Yeah. You know, all that. None of that.
Yeah.
Here we have just stuff like, God damn it, Jack. And
you went in there to swallow a bullet, Jack.
Just wait a goddamn minute. So many, lots of goddamns being bandied about. And I don't know.
Oh, another thing I learned, the mise-en-scene is unbelievable because he's a Chicago cop, right? Mm-hmm. So his apartment is adorned with not any Chicago bluesmen of any note, because they probably couldn't get that cleared. But the likes of, and I wrote it down, Jack Loud and Big Joe. And that's it. I don't know who the hell these people are.
Jack Loud?
And his entire apartment is bedecked with bluesmen and these guys with their pork pie hats and all that. So you really... get the sense they're really driving it home that Cracker Jack is enveloped in the Windy City culture of the deep dark blues,
and he's got the blues
after
losing his wife.
Yeah, well, as he should, and as maybe you will if you watch this. No, but I think not, because it's very, very entertaining.
It is extremely fun. Yeah, not as deliriously bad and goofy and hallucinogenic almost as Cracker Jack 3, but it's definitely worth your while. Yeah.
If not for Christopher Plummer's sartorial choice as well, but I think it's funny. I was mocking
shades at one point. You know, kind of remind me of Christopher Lee in Howling 2.
Oh my god,
Howling,
the Howling,
Howling. Every time I think of Howling 2, it just pops in my head automatically. Howling.
Star rating
for me. Well, Cracker Jack 3 was a 5-star bad movie. I mean, I had to give that movie. I
was texting you right off the bat, and I said, "This is making my brain hurt. This is mesmerizingly
bad." That
was
3 we're talking about.
3. Yeah. It's shocking in its badness. In unbelievably cheap, to the point I think at one point they used National Geographic maps to adorn what was ostensibly like FBI headquarters.
The war room,
fighting in the war room.
No hyperbole here whatsoever. To me, it's like the Plan 9 of outer space of action movies. That's how bad Cracker Jack 3 is. So 5-star bad movie all the way. If I'm comparing this to Cracker Jack 3, I mean, this is a deliriously bad movie and it's a fun one. I would have to give it 3.5 stars, but if I'm not comparing it to Cracker Jack 3, just for sheer entertainment value, 4 stars.
I'm thinking it behooves us to jump on the Judge Reinhold grenade of number two. I can't wait. I can't even imagine. That blows my mind. I mean, Judd Hirsch maybe even would have been like, I don't even know. I don't know where that could possibly go.
And yet again, Chris almost forced me to have a spit take.
But I mean, this thing has got it all. It's got Uzis. It's got Teutonic baddies with worse haircuts, really. Like undercuts when for someone who's beyond the age of 13. It's automatically a very sinister, weird look. It's got a love interest. They connect at the end. It's got internecine strife and family dynamics. It's got a hothead cop. It's got a Serpico. He's cut ties with the precinct because they can't deal with his antics.
It's got a cantankerous black partner at the beginning. So
who you never hear from again. No, I believe his name was Maury. And he was just basically cussing Jack Wilde under his breath in the squad car. And you never really hear anything from him again. You would have thought maybe he would have come to the resort as well to maybe try and provide assistance. He definitely doesn't do anything of what the diehard security guard guy does to help out McClane.
You mean the Reginald Val Johnson, the cop?
He does nothing of the sort. He disappears within, you know, a few frames of this bad sepia-toned horrible flashback. Some of the worst action you'll ever see. But you gotta admit the lead cuts a certain kind of figure. I don't know what kind exactly,
if you're going to say he cuts a figure, it's more of a bad figure.
considering his ability, he has to be lauded for his ability to knock back his copious amounts of Scotch whiskey without losing a beat. I mean, his hand-to-hand combat skills,
He was okay. He was okay. He acquitted himself okay.
Could have been worse.
Judge Reinhold. I gotta say,
prejudge, so to speak. Right, right. There you go.
Judge until we see judge.
I can't wait. I am officially at this point of the podcast a Cracker Jack completist, and if it goes up to six, I'm on board. If they're releasing a seventh, I don't care.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. We still need Cracker Jack 4, but
it can only get better from three. That's for sure.
Svensson and Oliver Grunier and Leo Rossi, I believe. He was in The Godfather, and then he finds himself in that track.
Oh, my God.
That killed the franchise dead, man. Without a doubt. Nobody's clamoring for Cracker Jack 4 after that one.
I'm going to give this a solid 3.5. So it doesn't reach, maybe 3.75. It doesn't reach the delusional, dizzying, spirited heights or depths, however you want to call it, of Cracker Jack 3. And spoiler alert, its denouement involves garden gnomes and using them as a disguise. That's something to behold in any film.
Like, but I said, Plan 9 from Outer Space of action films.
Yeah, you can't get any worse, it to yourselves.
Nor can you get any better.
If you can even find it, I'm not sure where one would go to view Cracker Jack 3. I, of course, own it on DVD.
How you found it was amazing.
It was video store going out of business in Koreatown. I descended upon it.
We went together.
We did. We did go together, and I thought, oh man, Bo Svensson, part three of something. The title is Cracker Jack. I'm on board with that. Why not?
I have one of the most generic, nondescript box cover art that I ever seen in my life.
Well, at the time, I guess it should be said, we were actively seeking really bad movies.
Yeah.
And as opposed to now, where we more stumble upon them, we're not as diligent in our searching, although we've got probably a few surprises of some really bad stuff coming up. But
we do.
And 3/4 for me. I mean, this is not a Cracker Jack production, but a Cracker Jack production of sorts. And we hope you continue to enjoy episodes of our podcast. And we are approaching our 300th episode. I don't even know what appellation you would bestow on the 300th of anything. It's not beyond centenary. I don't know. There's nothing beyond that, right?
Let's call it our Cracker Jack episode.
Okay.
In honor of Cracker Jack 3, 300.
300, yes. What we can assure you is we're not doing 300.
Yes.
But it's going to be good.
We discussed that a few podcasts ago.
It's true.
My hopes and dreams and aspirations.
We're crushed. Oh, my God. And we will talk to you soon.
Take care.